I'm Alice Great and welcome back to another episode Inside the Petri Dish for our International Women's Day celebrations. And today we are honoured to be joined by Angela Saini, a science broadcaster, journalist and author. Thank you so much for joining us, Angela.
Thank you for having me.
So, first things first, you've got so many sort of strings to your bow, as sort of our listeners can hear from your introduction. So why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and the work that you do?
I'm a science journalist. I've been a journalist my entire career. I used to work at ITN and the BBC as a producer and a reporter, but I left the BBC in 2008, so it's been 10 years now to focus on science journalism and writing books. And Inferior, my latest book, which just came out in 2017, is about how science got women wrong. It's my second book, and I'm currently working on my third book, which is going to be on race science.
That's so interesting and so exciting, I think. I'm looking forward to reading that. I'm a really big fan of Inferior, so I'm excited to read the next one as well. You started off in journalism, so what made you transition into science journalism and broadcasting?
Well, to me it's all the same. Often journalists go into different areas of journalism throughout their careers, so it wasn't a massive leap for me to go from general news reporting into science journalism. I had a background in engineering, so I have a master's in engineering, so I always had a love of science, and I would always, you know, my go-to books are either science fiction or science non-fiction, so it's always been a passion of mine. And I think particularly for me, I was fascinated by the ways in which science is used and abused in society, and the kind of crucial ways it underpins the way we think about ourselves, even the way politics is done. I mean, a lot of science reporting, understandably, is about, you know, new species has been discovered, or, you know, this is whiz-bang, new invention that we have. But I really, for me, the interesting thing was not so much that, but the kind of stories behind those stories. What goes on underneath the radar? What are the motivations of scientists for doing what they do? Where do they get their money from? Why do they do this research? How the public kind of takes hold of scientific research and uses that to its own ends or interprets that. I just find the story around science the interesting story, and that's kind of been the hallmark of my journalism.
It's interesting in how you talk about, you know, in Inferior and in your next book about bias within science, and how, you know, we live in a society that's incredibly biased, and raising people in a biased society leads to raising biased scientists. And so if you know, we take their word as truth, and we talk about their science as if you know, and don't question it, that can lead to problems, can't it? So things like you know, gender bias in science or racial bias in science is actually incredibly common. And I recently sort of rereading the story of Alice Lee, the mathematician who applied maths to biology, and she was looking at the widely accepted theory of craniology and how craniology was a widely accepted theory about the use of looking at skull bones and using that as a way of deciphering things about the person. So this had huge problems for race and gender, because typically, statistically, men tend to have larger skulls, and they thought of that meaning higher intellectual power, and women were therefore less intellectual. And she was one of the people that put the nail in the coffin of that theory. And that's really important, that people get to address these issues in science, and that's what you did with Inferior. So can you tell us a little bit about the main themes of Inferior?
Well, I think the point you make is really important, that we all do have bias, and actually I think we always will, because we're human. You know, every single one of us grows up in a certain environment with a certain set of ideas relayed to us by society, by our parents, by the schools we go to. And that's always going to be the case. Culture will not cease to exist. Upbringing will not cease to. We won't suddenly become Spocks overnight. That's never going to happen. And given that we all have our own personal biases in whichever direction, obviously science and research is going to be affected by that. And that's really not a revolutionary thing to say at all. You know, people have been saying that for many, many decades. I was recently rereading Stephen Jay Gould's book, The Mismeasure of Man, in which he looks at exactly this topic. And that book was written around the time I was born. So it's coming up to 40 years old. And he made the same point that social scientists and anthropologists have been making for a long time, which is we all view the world through our own lens. Now, science, or the hard sciences, kind of biology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, what they try to do is impose an objectivity on that lens, to say, we have a set of rules here, an empirical way of understanding the world and understanding ourselves, that is going to try to be as free from bias as possible, try to be as objective as possible, give us rules that transcend culture, time, society, everything, and really tell us the truth about ourselves and about the universe. And while I think that's perfectly possible in some respects, even when people try to be really, really objective, when you're studying humans, and humans are not just biological beings, we are social and cultural beings, then of course, the fact that we are humans studying humans is going to affect the outcome of research. It's going to affect not just the outcome, but also what we choose to research. For example, in this book I'm writing now on race, why has race been such an interesting topic to so many people? On the surface of it, skin colour or hair texture or how we look, it's actually very superficial. It doesn't really matter that much. So why has so much research and time being dedicated to it? It's not because in and of itself it's very important, but because it has meaning in society. And having a gender or a sex in society also has meaning attached to it. And that meaning comes from the fact that we live in a patriarchy, or many of us live in a patriarchy. We live in these societies in which gender really does matter. It defines how we behave towards each other, how we treat other people, the pay that we can expect when we get into the workplace, the things that we choose to do. It really transcends everything. And that's why sex difference is such a hot topic. It's a huge subject of research at the moment across many, many fields. And so what in Inferior I try to do is look at these different fields in which sex difference has become so important, and look at ways in which that research is done. Now, of course, this is very broad and there's so many thousands of studies out there. So the way I did it was to pinpoint some kind of very specific, very highly cited, important studies, and really look into them. What do these studies tell us? How have we interpreted them? And how much can we trust what they say? And again, what I found was that there are problems there. Sometimes there's problems to do with the bias of the researchers. Sometimes it's to do with how society interprets that research. But very often what came up again and again was that the cultural and social context of the research, when it was done, who it was done by, why it was done, really does have a profound impact on what the research says, which is very often why we get different results in different experiments at different points in time, because culture changes and the people change.
I think what's interesting as well when we're talking about gender and science is, we all talk about the lack of equal representation within science. Science for decades and centuries has been dominated by a very small group of people. And I think that is very interesting in itself, in that that plays into what ends up getting researched as well, that, you know, if we're looking at gender, the majority of scientists and researchers are male, they wouldn't necessarily think to research into certain situations that or areas that affect women, whereas female researchers might be more maybe more prepared to think of those as areas of research. For example, polycystic ovaries, where there's a lot of issues in that research, and so if there was more female researchers, there would be more drive to go into some of those areas that need more research to better lives of women. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I do think representation is important because, like you said, it does draw in different perspectives. You start to ask different questions. But that's not to say that male researchers are incapable of asking or answering these questions. They have. And there are very many good male researchers throughout the ages who have done really good research on women, who have really challenged some of the sexist research that has been biased or problematic because of prejudices by other researchers. So I don't think it's just about representation. It's also about, like I said, the context in which research is done. If we live in a society in which all people are equally valued and all people's issues and scientific questions are addressed, whoever it is that does the science, that's a good thing. And that's why today, even though in many quarters science remains male-dominated, these questions are being asked much, much more because society has changed. You know, the kind of Victorian attitude that people like Darwin or Francis Galton had has gone away in many areas now. So the kind of assumptions that they were making, we can't make now, because not because it's politically incorrect or anything like that. It's because we know better. You know, we look around the world and we just know better. And that goes for everyone. It goes for men, women, whoever. So I think it's about social context and cultural context, not just who is doing the science, but also the framework, the kind of cultural framework within which you're thinking about these scientific questions.
Because scientists don't exist in a vacuum. They are part of a context, aren't they?
Yeah. And actually, I was just going to say, sometimes it's easy to go too far with this. I mean, one thing I've observed since Inferior came out, and actually even before, while I was writing it, was that it's easy to think in binaries both ways. There are, you know, just like historically, we've had many men who've said that, no, women are very different from men, they think very differently, and they are inferior, which is what Darwin said. Darwin said that women are intellectually inferior to men. You also get women doing the same thing. So I've read very many women saying women are very different from men, but in a positive way. So, you know, we are empathic, we're intuitive, we have a different set of skills which we should be valuing. These are differences we should be valuing. And I think we need to be careful on both counts, because both of those versions of ourselves rest on stereotypes. You know, the positive stereotypes are still stereotypes. So we need to be, you know, super careful that we're not kind of cherry picking a certain account of women that suits our own belief system, but actually asking what are the facts here as far as we can understand them, and what's a better way to ask these questions and answer these questions in a truthful way. And actually that requires humility on all sides, for all of us to say we don't know very much. What we do know, let's try and understand better, and try and improve science by really living up to that ideal of objectivity, of rationality, of accepting our biases, whatever they are, and trying to move forward in a kind of more inclusive and wiser way, if you like, to not jump to conclusions. And if there's anything that I've learned from writing this book, it's the danger of jumping to conclusions. We all do it, and I do it as well, but I think we need to be really careful that we don't take single studies or little bits of research or our own personal experience. For example, you know, people say to me, I have a girl and she loves pink, so I think that all girls love pink. That is complete non sequitur. Why, You know, there are so problems with a statement like that, but we all do it. We can't help it. That's the way we, you know, generalizations are the way we understand the world and make sense of the world. But in science, we need to guard against that.
Yeah. And I think it's particularly interesting in something like behavioural science, where culture starts and where we start. I don't know how I can phrase this without sounding very convoluted, but, you know, as we touched on earlier, we all grow up in a context, and so that shapes us. So if you're growing up, say, you know, saying to women that you're meant to be good at this, this and this, then how much of that is lived up to, and how much of it is your personal attributes?
I think especially now, and I don't know why, maybe it's because of social media, maybe it's because of the internet, society moves so quickly. I was just reading the other day about how, you know, Friends, the sitcom, which I loved when I was growing up, now looks very outdated. It's yeah. One of these stereotypes.
I've rewatched it now. It's come back on Netflix, and I can't believe it, actually, watching it back when I loved it so much when I was younger.
Yeah, which is funny, you know, because in the 90s, we used to look back at the old programmes my dad used to watch in the 70s and say, oh, Dad, that's so old-fashioned. How could you possibly watch it? Like that's really racist, that's really sexist. But you know, millennials are doing exactly the same now about the programs we watched only 10, 20 years ago. Hasn't been that long. So it just goes to show how quickly society can move. And it will continue, it will do that forever. You know, in 30, 40 years, 100 years, things will be completely different. Our points of reference will not be the same as they are now. So science, you know, by its nature, will have to move along with that change in cultural attitudes and that point of reference.
That's so interesting, and it's so hard to encapsulate all of your work in a short podcast. So I think that gives our listeners enough flavour to go and read your book and find out more, really. So as it's part of International Women's Day and celebrating figures of women in science, I wanted to know a little bit about you and what have you learned something through your life, your work, that you could share, and some advice that you could give to our listeners?
Wow.
It's a big question, isn't it?
I guess, well, writing Inferior has definitely changed my life completely. I think about the world completely differently now. I think a lot of women go through this when they read feminist literature. For me, it came not just from reading feminist literature, which I have done for decades, but from looking at the science in detail, as I have done for the last few years, has been such a wake-up call for me. Because I think even when I was growing up, I should say, when I was at school, I was the only girl in my chemistry and maths classes because I took the physics stream, because I wanted to do engineering. And when I was at university, I was the only girl in my class in my college. And to some extent, I think in the back of my mind, I wondered if that was because other women didn't want to do it or weren't as good as I was in it. So I really was affected by this stereotype that other people projected onto me, that women aren't as good at this and you are an exception. And what writing this book has made me realise is that I'm not an exception. I just made different choices. So I'm not an exception in my abilities, I'm just an exception in the choices that I made. And the reason for that is that I grew up in a very egalitarian household. I was never told that there was anything I couldn't do. My dad was an engineer, so I thought I can just as well be an engineer too. And many girls that I grew up with didn't have that. So kind of that understanding that there aren't very many psychological and cognitive differences between men and women, or what there are very, very tiny. When you put that into the context of how unequal society is, you know, how unfairly women are treated as a result, the kind of long history of not just women in science being shortchanged and degraded and treated so badly, but women across industries. You know, I work in the media, and women in the media are treated very, very badly. Very unequally compared to men. The standards are completely different. It just fills me sometimes with such anger, but also hope that things will change. I'm really excited by what's happening around the world in terms of women marching, the rise in feminism, the kind of challenges that are coming to the system, this demand that we see a reckoning for the mistakes and the injustices of the past, I think is a really good thing. I wholeheartedly am there, you know, at the front, because it's just, it can't go on any longer. It's happened for too long. And, you know, I really sincerely believe, and I have my whole life, that equality is possible. And inferior actually really is a homage to that. You know, it, my ultimate argument is that there is no biological reason why equality isn't possible. We can do it. And I hope that that's what we achieve. I mean, in my life particularly, sexism has been a feature of my life. Obviously, I think it's an everyday sexism is a feature of many women's lives. But also racism. I grew up in Southeast London, which is a very racist part of the world in the 80s and 90s. You know, Stephen Lawrence was killed near me. He was around my age when he died. And it really framed the way I thought about the world, you know, my how I thought about being British, the differences, why they were so important to people. And that's part of the reason why, having written Inferior, I wanted to write this book on race. I think race for me is as important a question, because for me personally, in my life, it's been, you know, a massive, important kind of looming figure in my life.
Oh, well, that's such... So it's, there was so much hope in that statement. and I hope that sort of filters down through the earphones of the people watching, and they feel inspired to get out and talk about equality and join in women's marches and get some feminist literature and read Inferior. So thank you so much for joining us on Inside the Petri Dish for our International Women's Day celebrations. It's been an honour, Angela. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alice, and happy International Women's Day to everyone.